From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 31st day of January 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at agmarket.net. And a bit later in the program, we'll take up the weather forecast, including that cold, snowy, icy weather from Texas to Oklahoma, all the way into some other parts of the Mid-South with Don Day. He's a day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And today we'll hear from Gary Schnitke again. He'll talk about variable cash rents and how to set them for the 2023 growing season. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today at $6.79¾, finished four lower on the afternoon. The May at $6.77½, down 3¾, and December $5.90¾, up a penny. The March soybeans, $15.38, settlement price there up 2¾. May up 0.75¢ at $15.30¼, and November beans, $13.63 a bushel, down 4½¢. Bean meal at $484.20, down $4.50. The bean oil at $62.33, $1 and a penny higher for the day. Soft red winter wheat up 8¾¢, $7.61¼ the settlement price for the March. December at $7.90¾, up 8. The hard red winter at $8.78¾ for the March, up 5¢ on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at $163.25, 32½ lower. Feeder cattle for 100 pounds were up $2.22½ at $186.15, and lean hogs $86.42½ a pound, finished a dime lower on the day. The gold futures at $1,945.60, up $6.40. Crude oil at $78.51, up 61 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline today on the RBOB at $255.56, rather, up 5¼¢. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 200 points higher at 33,988. The S&P 500 up 35½ points. Here to talk about these numbers is Wayne Nelson. He's with agmarket.net out of New Market, Indiana. Hi, Wayne. Thank you for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here today, Todd.
The marketplace has been, I think, marking time a little bit, although I was gone last week, and it appears soybeans managed a pretty good rally. Can you talk a little bit about that and then what happened today?
You know, we have inched the beans on up. It seems like the meal has been pulling them on up. You know, we had talk, Argentina had to import at least one, if not two, loads of beans from Brazil that they shipped down there and going on that way. So we continue to see that. We have talk that China, you know, more hogs, and they need a little more beans for meal like that. But they seem to be very hesitant about buying any beans from the U.S. As such right now, or any new announcements that way. But there's talking about switching from other things besides bean meal to add some protein. But the beans and the meal have seemed to hang in pretty good here, and they went up against some resistance here today. So, but, you know, it looked like a turnaround Tuesday when we come in this morning. And, you know, when we reopened, why we saw fund money or managed money come in and start buying.
Didn't end up being a turnaround Tuesday, though the market finished a little higher or traded a little higher for the soybeans for a while. What are the expectations for the rest of the week?
Well, I think, you know, a lot's going to tell tomorrow afternoon when the government comes in and tells us whether the expectations are for a quarter point rise. And we're looking for that. There are some people hoping there might be no rise, but I think the quarter point rise is probably an 80 or 90% possibility that way. So, you know, we've got a little uneasiness of the South American production. You know, we're looking down there. The first half of February looks to be dry in Argentina, and we continue the wet stuff, wetter areas there in Brazil. And the one thing we're doing here is that's delaying the soybean harvest, which is delaying the safrinha crop getting planted in that down there. So, you know, we're going to be watching to see what happens there. But a little bit of concern about the beans might hold on the idea that Argentina, if it does turn dry down there.
Well, I do want to talk a little bit about redistribution of soybeans within South America. You mentioned that a couple of loads may have gone across the borders from Brazil to Argentina. Argentina suffering through its third drought in 3 years at this point. They probably will be in need of soybeans. Does this mean that there might be more room on the world or global space for U.S. soybeans into the export market?
Well, of course, we're hoping that that's the way it goes. And it's going to take, you know, it's going to make a big difference on if they stay dry and that area is dry. You know, right before we're looking that Argentine's shortfall would be made up by Brazilian's excess. But if they have a little too much rain in Brazil, a little less rain now, even for the second half here of February, you know, we could see a little bit more open up for the U.S. And also there could be the possibility of shipping some beans out of the U.S. port down there. Even if it's only a couple of boatloads, it sure wouldn't hurt our export numbers.
And finally, at the end of this week, the AgMarket.net event happens in Nashville. I take it you're headed that way?
We're going to be heading down there. Yeah, we're going to spend the weekend in Nashville. Going to have a real good conference. We're going to meet Sunday afternoon for a short training session, and then all day Monday. And some really good speakers, some good weather people. And it's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully we can line up some plans for this coming year. And then as we talk about that, it's just a month away from the Beef House.
Yeah, the Beef House event is coming up on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. This will be your, it's 23, so this will be your, what, 32nd event. You've been to all of them.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to being there and seeing everybody again. You know, it's just we're looking forward to going to Nashville this weekend. So just a lot of things to look forward to.
Hey, thanks much, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net. He'll be in Nashville with the AgMarket.net folks for their conference this coming weekend into the early part of next week. And then a month from now, we'll get this up on the website soon enough so that you can get yourself registered, but put it in your calendar on the 7th day of March. That's a Tuesday at the Beef House. We'll hold the all-day Ag Outlook. We've got a great agenda for you, and it includes this year a representative from John Deere who's going to talk about automation and vision related to agricultural products. I think you will find the whole day with the folks from willag.org, the FarmDoc team, and a couple of extras to be really worthwhile. Watch for registration coming up soon for the All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined again by Gary Schnittke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the U of I. He's written a new article posted to the FarmDoc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. This one's on variable cash rent arrangements for 2023. Why did you choose the topic of variable cash rents?
So we've been getting a number of questions about variable cash rents, and they're becoming a bit more popular in use. But variable cash rents base their payments or their bonus on a percentage of crop revenue. That doesn't include any recognition that costs have increased quite dramatically in several years. So the question has arisen, what are these things going to look like going into 2023?
Where did you start?
So we looked and saw, and we set up a variable cash rent, and our rent factors are the percent of gross revenue are 32% for corn, 43% for soybeans. That causes a variable cash rent to have roughly the same returns as share rent and cash rent over time from 2000 to 2021. If we look at in recent years, 2022 and 23, variable cash rent has been generating a higher payment than share rents. So just to give you a feel for 2023, a variable cash rent is projected to have a $411 payment and a share rent $373. So the variable cash rent is getting higher than the share rent. That variable cash rent still has a positive farmer return because it's of its rent factors. But if we go to higher rent factors, say a 40% for corn and a 45% for soybeans, we have for 2023, variable cash rent much higher, $30 per acre higher, and that would lead to a negative return for the farmer.
How does a variable cash rent lease work again? I take it there is a base that you've talked about and the percent, which is yield times price times this percent per corn and or soybean?
Yeah, so there would be a base cash rent, and that base cash rent gets paid no matter what. I would suggest that base cash rent be lower than the average cash rent in the area so that there's some downside protection for the farmer. So you have a base cash rent, and then there's a bonus payment at the end of the year when crop revenue times a rent factor, and crop revenue would be yield times price, farm yield times agreed on price, is above that base cash rent. And those rent factors vary across leases, but a 32% rent factor for corn and 43% for soybeans cause the variable cash lease to have the same payment as the share rent and cash rent over time at the average cash lease. So that's how that works.
When you take those numbers and put them into projections for returns for the farmer, what does it look like for this past year, 2022, and for the coming year, 2023?
All right. So for 2022, we are projecting very high returns for the farmer. We're projecting almost $600 return, operator and land return, which then can be split between the farmer and the landowner. That's because we have very good prices right now, and yields were pretty good as well. In that case, our average cash rent for, we're using Central Illinois high productivity, is $336. So farmer would then make 600 minus 336. Our share rent is actually above our average cash rent. 413 is what the share rent returns. And the share rent moves up and down depending on what yield and price are and what cost are. And our variable cash rent is above that, $444 per acre. So it's $30 higher than the share rent, but farmers are still okay at those levels. Moving into 2023, we go from operator and land return of close to $600 to $423. And we're using still high 2023 harvest prices of $550 corn, $1,350 for soybeans. Current fall bids, but also costs have gone up. So 423, and if we look at a variable cash rent at that average factors, we have a $411 payment. So the farmer makes $12, all right, which is a pretty marginal return. And the share rent actually is $373, so we're still... That gives them $30 more. But if you get the rent factor at 40%, you know, it's a negative farmer return.
What adjustments might come in future years?
So in future years, and prices will come down sometime in the future. I'm pretty sure of that. I don't know when. But we have to see costs come down the same time prices come down, which, and those costs usually lag. So, and if that all happens, we have to adjust cash rents down. We have to adjust the variable cash rent factors down, and even share rents, unless will be negative returns if we have a price decline and costs stay at the same levels. So, all these leases will have to adjust in the future if we have prices go back to $4 corn and $10 soybeans. And costs don't come down.
On that note, there is a sentence at the end of this article that says, with high rent factors in 2023, even using, I think, $550 for corn and $1,350 for soybeans,
yeah,
there are potential losses for farmers.
And again, your $550 times 225 bushel corn, which is what we're projecting, is a pretty high gross crop revenue. You take 40% of it, you get a big number. But our costs have gone up, you know, $150 for corn in the last 2 years.
Hey, thanks much, Gary.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He and Nick Paulson last Thursday during the IFAS online webinar went through the 2023 crop budgets. You can see that in the archive at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look under webinars. And you can sign up for the continuing IFAS series if you've not already. These are free. They run from 11 to noon each Thursday. Our next one this week will be about agriculture in South America. Joanna Colusi from the FarmDoc team will make that presentation. You won't want to miss it. It starts at 11 a.m. You can sign up right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu this coming Thursday. You know, here on this program, we talk about the farm gate price of commodities all of the time, but how does that translate into the price of food? Well, Gary Crawford from the United States Department of Agriculture has some insight with an economist there as to what food prices might look like for the consumer this year.
A month ago, Agriculture Department analysts and economists were forecasting that grocery store food prices would rise in 2023 by about 3.5% to 4.5%, certainly better than the 11+% that we saw last year. But now, instead of about 4%,
we are forecasting an 8% increase in prices.
Ouch. USDA economist Matt McLaughlin says that's actually the midpoint of a possible forecast range of
between 4.5 and 11.7%.
Matt says this is the result of the Ag Department developing a new, very highly sophisticated system for food price forecasting that gives a range of possible food price hikes. It'll be a wide range here, of course, at the first of the year because
there are still a lot of changes yet to happen this year. We could again have some changes in interest rates, like we've seen for the past few months. We could have events like highly pathogenic avian influenza, which changed egg prices last year. There's a lot to come in this year.
And so the range of forecasts will narrow down as 2023 wears on. But Matt says, for the most part, the forecasts coming out of this new system are pointing to continued rising prices for most food items. Let's take the food most in the news these days, eggs. So now, an egg sighting song asking the musical question. Well, some might say they'd like their eggs a little less pricey, especially after this past year when retail egg prices caused shell shock, going up by 32%, mostly because of avian influenza bird flu, causing the loss of millions of chickens. But if you're hoping for egg prices to ease downward in 2023, you may be disappointed. In fact,
our forecasting model suggests that we will see a 27.3% price increase for eggs.
On top of last year's increase, Matt says he knows 27%, that really sounds radical, but with bird flu still causing record losses across the country,
I don't think that this number is out of bounds.
And Matt says he does not foresee egg prices going down this year at all.
Unless we see influenza disappear or a very good remedy comes into place.
Meanwhile, USDA analysts are forecasting double-digit inflation for things like processed meats, butter, sugar, and sweets, cereal, and bakery products. However, one bit of good news here, we may see prices actually go down this year for beef and pork. Now, for beef,
we expect a 1.8% decrease. That's our best prediction. And then for pork, we're expecting a 3% decrease in pork prices.
Beef and pork were among the first foods to see skyrocketing prices when COVID began in 2020, and they now appear to be the first of the major foods to begin a slow price descent. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell me just a little bit about the weather this week in the United States, particularly in the Southwest to the Mid-America area. It looks like it's pretty rough.
Yeah, a lot of winter weather here over the last week, and we're looking at a big icing event going on across Texas through parts of Oklahoma into Arkansas and into even portions of Tennessee, northern Alabama, Mississippi, looking at a lot of ice accumulation there. And this is on the edge of an Arctic outbreak that hit the Rockies and the northern plain states late last week and over the weekend. And that cold air is just kind of oozing very slowly south and east. And we'll cover a lot of the United States here over the next couple of days. In fact, some of the coldest, it will be the coldest air of the season. We'll hit New England. Parts of the northeastern United States might see some record cold. You know, minus 50, 40 to minus 50 could happen in parts of Ontario before this cold air mass moves on through. Now, there's not a lot of precipitation in the heartland, though. The Midwest, northern plains, central plains, it's just cold. The moisture is going to be more directed towards the southern areas.
Clear and cold here. 6 degrees, I think, when I awakened this morning. So single digits. Have we gotten through the worst part of the cold yet, or is it still to come?
There's more to cold to come. There's actually going to be a little bit of a respite. But as we get into the Friday, late Thursday night, Friday, Saturday time frame, there's another push of very cold air going across southern Canada that will push into the upper Midwest, Great Lakes, get into the northern and central Corn Belt again. So there's really no significant warming trend between now and early next week. It's going to stay cold. And after this cold shot, we do expect sometime next week to have a little bit of a rebound. But I think February is going to have plenty of winter weather to contend with, really coast to coast.
Did I see that New York is still snowless? Is that right?
Yeah, right along the East Coast. If you go into the Washington, D.C., up to New York, up to Boston, that area has had a very mild winter. And the way the storms have tracked, it's been kind of an unusual situation where they haven't seen the snow. Now, you have to contrast that. Yeah, okay, that's New York City. But then you got Buffalo on the other side of New York that's had record amounts of snow. So it's kind of a narrow area of the Northeast. There's a large part of the United States that's had a lot of really nasty winter weather. So New York is going to see a little bit of snow this weekend and some really, really cold temperatures. So that should put it into the streak there.
Does this first beginning of the week of February portend what the rest of the month will look like, do you suppose?
Well, you know, we got the groundhog who's going to be showing up later this week. And I predict he will see his shadow. Because if I were the groundhog, from what I'm seeing, 6 weeks of more winter looks to be an easy bet.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, don't forget that this coming Thursday, the Farm Dog team and the Illinois Farm Economics Summit Online, or IFAS Online series, will present information about South American agricultural production. Joanna Colucci does a great job. You won't want to miss that. You can find it online and sign up right now at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Been listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.